This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Stephanie Lecce. It's nice to have you listening today. We all know that children who grow up in disadvantaged homes face unique challenges to their well-being and their chances for success later in life. But growing up in low-income circumstances isn't a blanket predictor of a child's future. Some may do well, some may struggle. But are there factors that could predict a child's future situation? Do children of a particular demographic fare better than those of another in the long run? How much depends on a child's ability to grow and make his own future, and how much is out of his control? These were the questions asked by three researchers at Johns Hopkins University. In a groundbreaking study, they tracked low-income children in Baltimore, Maryland over the course of 25 years, and just this past April published their results in a book called The Long Shadow: Family Background, Disadvantaged Urban Youth, and the Transition to Adulthood. To help us parse through the conclusions, Lake Effect's Real Talk contributor David Pate joins me in the studio. David, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Stephanie. It's great to be back as always.
So why might looking at the example of low-income children's long-term well-being in Baltimore be helpful to us here in Milwaukee?
The one thing this study does that is really unique is the first study of its kind that looks at 25 years of data, longitudinally, as you mentioned, but also Baltimore is very much like Milwaukee. It lost industry, which was factories in the 70s. It lost a lot of economic opportunities for those who were low income, who had a high school degree or less. It lost a lot of the security it had in the city for people to be able to maintain their well-being and their life. But the one thing that I think is really most important is that they have very high concentrations of poverty in certain parts of Baltimore, very much like Milwaukee, where we're seeing some outcomes by race and gender that are very unique, that are very applicable to a city like Milwaukee. And that's why this is the first study of its kind to show cities similar to a Milwaukee or a Chicago or a St. Louis or cities that are experiencing some of these pockets of poverty. What can we do that can maybe eradicate some of the issues that they have around their well-being that could be challenges for the future? So it's really a very exciting and important study that's been done by Johns Hopkins that I'm very excited to talk about that we can learn something from in the city of Milwaukee.
What were some of the points of interest that the study authors tracked over these 25 years?
They looked at how well students did in school. They looked at whether or not when these young men and women turned 18, did they get a job? Did they have jobs while they were teenagers? What were some of their health outcomes? They looked at what were some of their issues of stress they dealt with over time. But most importantly, the main thing they wanted to look at is do people who have come out of these very poor communities by race and gender succeed differently? Do they have some resiliency within their own lives, or they have some other kind of strengths that we haven't really documented that we can learn from? The other thing about this study is it looks at white men and poor white men. We don't often talk about poor white men or poor white women, and how do they do in these same very similar communities?
Well, so looking at all groups, what were some of the factors that the study authors found made a difference in these low-income children growing into successful adulthood?
The first thing they talk about is this whole idea that your family is a launching pad and there's family resources. For example, I looked at some, when I was reading the study, they talked about males, two sets of males, black males and white males. They both had incarceration rates. They both had dropout issues. They both had children at early ages. They also had job experiences. Some of them went to college. But if you look at it by race, the white men still did better. You know, even though they had the exact same low-income salaries, their parents were making less than $25,000 a year, and they were in what we would call a concentrated poverty community where poverty was above 40% of everyone in that community. But you still saw that these parents who were white had social networks that led to a job, that led to some kind of consistent employment. That employment could be, my son can work at your electrician shop and learn how to be an electrician, or learn how to be a carpenter, or learn how to do some other kind of work because I know someone in the construction business. Where for the black families, they didn't have those same networks. They had a higher concentration of incarceration. They had a lot more stress around violence in their community, which was slightly different than the white community. And so the social networking is something I think is really important that I think we underplay often by race. But I have seen in Milwaukee that a lot of people who I talk to, particularly men, don't have those same social networks. This access to employment was very different, and it made a big difference for future outcomes for men. And they also found that these families also had a little bit more stability around, even though they may be poor, they had a little bit more stability on family members they could fall back on for a rainy day. If something went wrong and it didn't really work for them, they could call up a family member and say, I need to live with you. Where for someone who was Black, they were finding it was a lot harder to have some of that same type of resources. So human resources or human capital within these families was just very different, even though slight differences made a big difference in how they were able to have successful outcomes.
Well, so one of my concerns then when we're talking about family structure and the impact of that is that you sometimes will get into people blaming the victim, talking about people's individual choices or perhaps just some differences. We've talked about how many Black families aren't married, but they're still committed partners. The fathers are still involved. But there's this stereotype, and it comes down to choices instead of looking at real structural issues like you've been talking about that create challenges that these families might experience.
Well, you know, the one thing about the one thing I want to address, you said they're not married. In these white families, there was a higher rate of marriage. You're exactly right. The reality is 73% of Black kids are born to single parents. But they also have, what I have found in my research, but also what people have found most recently federally, is that Black fathers are some of the most involved fathers in the country. And this is through a CDC study that was released. But also, from my own research, I see oftentimes a lot of Black men who are very involved. So there is a reality, and I'm going to be truthful, that there are the most Black kids are born into a family that is a single parent. That's the truth. And with single parent families, there is more challenges and barriers to success or possible barriers to success. However, many single mothers are doing a fabulous job of raising their children. And also, many of these men are involved, and we tend to buy into a stereotype that these men are not involved. I mean, one of the men that we had on one of our interviews previously, Armando, is a very involved father. In fact, is raising his child. And I see more men like that than I see less men. However, we also have one of the highest incarceration rates of men, so men are not around. A study that just came out last week from two University of Chicago professors showed that over the last 50 years, Black men are nowhere near the same level of socioeconomic status as white men. There has not been much progress at all.
But so the point basically is that when we look at a factor like family cohesion as being a benefit for children's longitudinal well-being, it doesn't take one form, that
exactly.
We really need to look at the individual families
exactly.
And what's going on there.
And I can't stress enough, this access to employment is something that is glaring. And yeah, we can say blame the victim, that they should work harder. But these families were all both working at the same level of opportunity, whatever was available to them for opportunities to do better in their lives, it was there. However, they're finding that there's something around what we are less fearful of or what we are able to trust, whom we are able to trust. So the issue of race has been a discussion. The University of Chicago did a really big study on their business school said race is still a real issue. And there was one guy from MDRC said, we have people who will say to us, I'm scared of this young Black man because of his presence, how he looks. I don't know why that is, but the reality is I am still nervous about that. So we can say, yes, you can blame the victim, but there is something structurally going on that we as a society and as a community need to have a real discussion about.
Well, and we've seen that represented here in studies done in Milwaukee. I'm thinking of the Diva Pager study showing that a white man with lesser educational attainment actually has a better chance than a Black man with a higher educational attainment in getting a job.
Exactly. And this is playing out more and more as we look at what are some of the factors. And I think that what I even saw with my own academic colleagues is this discomfort with being labeled as a racist when you have these kind of conversations. And I don't think people will be – I think that we have to put it on the table. This is the reality. We have to get real about a real discussion on what are some of the factors. Some of it is definitely individual, personal. You just didn't do it right. You didn't do something right. You made a mistake or you just didn't think correctly in doing what you're doing. But there is some structural issues around how we perceive certain types of men and women in our society, and we need to do a better job at acknowledging that. And also one thing the study made me think about, which I have to bring up my own bias, we don't think of white people as poor. We don't put the same type of characterization on it. It says when we think of Black people being poor, it's almost like it's a norm. But for white people, we think that must just be a mistake and it must be just temporary. But there are very many black white families who are poor a lot, and particularly in a rural community like in Wisconsin. There's people who are definitely poor. They may live off the farm, but they may still have a lot of challenges. But also across this country, there are many white people who we have not taken the advantage of learning what are some of their challenges and barriers. Even though they still have better outcomes, there still is a lot of challenges and barriers for those families as well. And that's what I really appreciate about this study. They really have made me as an academic be forced to acknowledge my own bias towards leaning towards a black and brown study versus there are white people out there, too, who are having some challenges.
So what were some of the other factors attributed to children of all races and all groups having a successful outcome?
Well, the one thing that they say, too, success in school is a vehicle by which children who are privileged are able to take advantage of that. I mean, you and I both have had the advantage of having parents who have been educated and have those privileges. And it's very clear there. They can see that. However, they said with the white kids, there's still something also around even being in school. The teachers will kind of lean towards them and see them as more acceptable and more apt to be successful. So they may get more attention around their academic achievement. They also talked about the whole idea that whites from the same backgrounds are accessed to, again, and I have to reiterate it one more time, this whole idea of higher wage employment. But also they said that the one thing I thought was really interesting was that black women get more jobs, but they still are getting less pay. So even with the few black men who were able to get jobs, women who were black and working were still worse off than black men who were working. But white men and white women were doing better because the white women had the privilege of the white men who were working. So if they were married, who generally was a white partner, there was an additional privilege that came with that. So two low-income white people who are working together are going to do better in the majority of times than two low-income black people who may get married.
It sounds like for black women, they're faced with a double whammy of mm-hmm. challenges. I want to know a little bit more about their situation. What were things that helped them to achieve well-being? Mm-hmm. And what were some of the additional barriers that they faced?
I mean, for many of the women in this particular study, one of the things was that they did lean towards graduation. I mean, graduation still is a big key. The fact that they did go to school. And the fact also, they said a big factor is that if they were able to get a job while they were in high school was a big deal. Unfortunately, for many black kids in our country, the unemployment rate for black teenagers is like ridiculously high, like over 65% black kids do not get a job. And that's one of the ways that you will find through research that we have seen makes a big difference. So some of these young women were able to secure jobs while they were in high school, graduate from high school, and then get a job right out of high school. And it may have been through their receipt of a TANF check, because TANF is a work-based program now. So having a child allowed them that opportunity. But for many of the black men, the only way they've been able to get any type of employment opportunity was if they were involved in the criminal justice system or if they were involved in the child support system. And so many of them lost that opportunity. They don't have the job skills because they weren't able to get, they didn't commit either one of the, they didn't commit a crime or have a baby, which we would not want people to do when they're young. But that was the only way they had access to getting work was if they committed a crime or they had a baby, because then there was some other basis of a program that provided an access. For the women also, delaying pregnancy. I mean, that's a big deal. Some of them delayed having children. So it was no one factor, but there was one factor. The main factor was education. But the multitude of factors, such as having a baby and not being involved in drugs or not being incarcerated, made a big difference as well. You find more of that on the male side, the incarceration rate, because they gave us a small sample of men in particular at two schools that had the most poverty. And for the black men, out of the 22 they interviewed, 18 of them had had some incarceration contact. For the white men of the ones they interviewed, 11 of them of the 18 they interviewed hadn't. So it was still very high on both sides. But still, as you mentioned earlier with the Divide Pager study, those white men were still able to get jobs. So it really is a very simplistic answer. Education and you get a job. And that makes the biggest difference that they came down with after this 25-year study. But the thing that was unique was it still showed with the same type of demographics, white men are still going to do better.
So what do we take from this? I mean, it seems simplistic, right? Mm-hmm. But it's really not. As we're talking about this and we're digging into this, there are so many factors that are coming together to determine whether someone's going to achieve what we consider to be well-being or not, coming from these very humble beginnings. But what do we take from this? I mean, what do we go forward and do with this information?
You know, one thing I think that would be good for Milwaukee to do, and it's really on the onus of us as academic, me as an academic, and also talking to people in the city, is that to look at what type of job opportunities do we provide for students when they're in high school, and really push to have an opportunity for students to get work when they're young, because it really sets the standard of how what they expect and how do you have good work behavior and how you develop a resume. We need to challenge our school system on a continuous basis because education is still the key, and if we have students such as I will often talk about students who I may receive at UW-Milwaukee who often have not been given the skills that they were supposed to get in high school, that we need to challenge the school system, not just the school system, but the community college system, and that we really want to make sure that we provide the academic rigor that people need to be able to meet the challenges of a global world that's changing and really becoming more technologically sound. We need to also look at the amount of violence people live in and what does the trauma do to people where they're living in places where they hear consistent gunshots or they're dealing with seeing violence in their community. Because what we have found, and this study only touched on it lightly, but other studies I know of friends who have done work around the country, the amount of anxiety that people tend to develop over time from being exposed to violence on a regular basis does not allow for good study skills and good comfort level around getting your work done. You have so many other things to worry about that you can't do that. So we need to attend to just really reducing the violence in the communities and also providing good access to health care. I mean, they don't touch on it a whole lot. But the fact that you need to be sure that people have gotten all the shots they needed, that they've gotten all the immunizations they need to have. And we need to start with kids early in life. You know, this study really just showed that a lot of what happens to people when they become adults is really set by the parents they are born into. And I don't want to say I'm blaming these parents. It's just that we need to be very careful about not just doing things for kids, but doing things for their parents as well. It needs to be a family effort, because if you send in a kid back home who you think is doing well, if their parents still are struggling with the job, or the kids see their parents always stressed out, or these parents are interacting in a stressful way, it's not going to allow that kid to be the full person they can be. So we need to really do more policy around looking at the total family, not just individuals and in silos.
Well, thanks, David.
Thank you again for a wonderful opportunity to talk about another study.
David Pate is Lake Effect's Real Talk contributor on race, gender, and class issues. He's an associate professor in UW-Milwaukee's Helen Bader School of Social Welfare, and he's the founder of the Center for Family Policy and Practice. Coming up next, we hear about a Sherman Park resale shop that doubles as work training for some Milwaukee youth. That's when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.